Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. All right, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, and this week, it's Anthony's pick. We're going back to a little Def Leppard and Hysteria. Guys, you ready to do this?
Ready. Anthony, I know you were struggling with the tagline this week. Do you want me to step in, or are you going to handle it?
How about I do mine, then you do yours? We'll do two for this monster album.
Sounds good. Mine was
Step Inside, Walk This Way. It's the Audible Ecstasy podcast.
See, that's pretty good. That's good. That's pretty good. Yeah, I don't mind that. I was like, just don't be hysterical. It's just the Audible Ecstasy podcast. But I think I like yours better now.
Yeah, yours is nice, dude. They're both good, guys. Yeah, y'all.
I would say pour some sugar on us. It's the Audible Ecstasy podcast. But at our age and the hair on our bodies and all that stuff, that's not a mess.
Not a good call. good Lord. All right, Chris, let's get this thing started with track, what are we doing? Track number one here. It's called Women. Guys, so before this even gets started, there's going to be a common denominator through just about every one of these songs. And this is the tone that honestly defines the hair generation. It's that driving bass, the incredible drum sounds they got out of a guy who had lost his arm a few years prior. A one-arm drummer is doing this. It's absolutely fantastic. I can't think of a better song to start this album out with. It is absolutely perfect spotting on this record. Coming from Pyromania after a 4-year hiatus and dropping this monster bomb. Women is outstanding from start to finish. It's their second single.
It's the first
incredible. Women was their second single, I thought, but maybe it was their first single. Animal was their first, I thought.
Yeah, that's what it says. I think so.
Is that what it said?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Women was the first one I saw by him off this one.
Animals, July, and Women
87 in August is Women, yeah.
So they're really close to each other. Okay, well, my bad.
They were.
I always assumed Women was the first, because that's the first one I saw on, like, Headbanger's Ball.
Well, the video was fantastic, and this album is full of them. I mean, we're going to talk about that a lot. I love the tone of the guitar on this, and I love everything about how this record is starting out. Fantastic, outstanding. I gave this one a 9. Chris, what do you think about Women?
You know, it's funny when I started doing this review, I about two or three songs in, I noticed I was kind of writing the same stuff. Yeah. And I thought I might actually just like record myself saying a few phrases and just put it on the soundboard, hit it every time, because basically Very singable chorus, great harmonies, great bass line, great drums, solid guitar solo. That feels like that is true for just about every song on this album. So I'm going to be saying a lot of that stuff tonight. Joe sounds fantastic. Very good opener. It was a solid hit. I may be coming in a little low. I gave it 8.5. I think it's between excellent and outstanding. Tremendous opening song. Yep.
Fantastic. All right, Anthony, what did you think about Women?
We're about to get stupid on this podcast today.
How many tens you got? Just tell me off the bat. Oh, I got a
6 or 7.
Oh, God. Go ahead, man. I remember you said this during that one episode was better than Welcome to the Jungle. So, I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. I'll take
the same. I agree. I think it is better than Welcome to the Jungle.
That's debatable. Go ahead, man.
That's more my Guns N' Roses bias, where I don't think they're as good as they think they should be.
I do think Guns, that is maybe their biggest song ever, though. It's hard to like...
Sweet Child of Mine is probably their biggest song ever. Or Paradise City.
Go ahead, man.
No, this is like shooting tens in a barrel, man. That's what I said last week, and I agree with that. This album, I said in the closing, this album is probably in the top 5, top 10 of all 80s albums. I mean, it was that big up there with 80s albums. But this song, songfacts.com, goes, as a general rule, women don't like songs called Women, especially when they're prurient tales of male desire set in biblical times. When they released this song, Def Leppard knew that it would gin up their core audience, but would have little appeal to the female fans who had made them superstars. It took them 3 years for the band to complete the Hysteria album, and when they did, they released Women, now this says as their first single, in America, where their previous album, Pyromania, sold over 10 million copies. While the band considered Animal to be the natural first single, they wanted to make sure their hardcore American fans, which were men, would get what they were hoping for in that first taste of the new album. And a swaggering song about beautiful women was the perfect choice for an introduction. The song just grazed the charts at number 80, but it was played on rock stations and helped build a buzz for Hysteria, which sold about 1.5 million copies before Animal was released as the next single. So that's what this one says. So I think they just came out so close to each other that it's one of those flip a coin kind of things.
Yeah, I'm going by what the old wiki had to say. So, and it absolutely could be wrong.
Because Anthony said, you know, you've got the English charts and then the American. Maybe it's different. Maybe they flip-flop that, and I don't know which one we're looking at here. So,
because I personally remember Women hitting Hysteria. That was the first time I heard this new album in video form, was Women dropping on like Headbangers Ball or something like that. That was the first time that I was alluded to this album or something like that. So, alluded's the right word. But... well, I guess we can debate on that. Anybody wants to comment and let us know, please. Anybody reaches out. So, but this is one of my many 10s on here. This is a 10 for me, man. This is perfection for these guys. This is just one of their best songs. It's a personal favorite. A song that should have been much, much more popular. It's not a flaw here. Amazing way to lead an album in. And one of the few songs here that really throw back to their early sound, which is probably why maybe it, I don't know, I generate towards it sometimes a little more. But anyways, I've always loved this song, and I've always just been a pity that this song didn't get more popular. It should have blown up for him. So,
good point. It does feel like it would fit very well on Pyromania. Yeah, that's a good
Pyromania
point.
You could even maybe
High and Dry.
If Rick had two arms, maybe even High and Dry, this could be hit.
No,
kind of song.
No, it wouldn't fit that at all. Y'all are crazy.
If he would have,
I could hear this on Pyromania.
No, yeah. Not this song. There's a couple on here maybe, but not this. The dark half, or the second half of this album, I like to call it. There's a couple songs on that side could definitely be on.
Dark.
Well, those are heavy tunes on the.
There ain't no dark half on this album. They're all.
Oh no, no.
Fantastic.
I'm just saying. I don't mean as bad songs. I mean as heavier songs. The heavier songs on the second half of this album.
Run Riot.
And they could have. Yeah, Run Riot could have fit on Pyromania like a heartbeat.
They could be.
Probably was written back then. I don't even know. But no, Shotgun. By God, dude.
Don't shoot Shotgun.
Here we are again. Here we go. Let's go to track number 2. Rocket.
Yeah.
right, so Rocket, and we're probably going to have different opinions on this one, but this one hits me in the right spot. Seventh single, according to Wiki. I don't know how true that is, but this one came out in 1989, 2 years after, or a year and a half after the album was released. And, man, there's something about this song. Once again, it's a driving bass, that beat. The harmonies and the vocals on this song are absolutely outstanding. This is Joe Elliott, Rick Savage at their peak. Because I know Rick's the majority of the backing vocals. Everybody does it. But we, let's
you know
it.
What?
Rick is the one who does the backing vocals. We know it. He's got an outstanding voice.
That was in my comments. I was like, which one of these guys is the backing vocals? Because my God.
Oh my God, dude. It's outstanding. His voice pairs so perfectly with Joe. It's no wonder they've stood side by side without any kind of issues over these 50 years of being a band or whatever how long it's been now. I think this one is our first hint of perfection on this album. And I know it's biased because I love this song. Absolutely love this song.
Biased.
It's a 10 in my ears and a 10 in my heart because I loved it so much. And that's how I went with this one. I know you shouldn't do it that way, but guys, I love this song.
No, you should do it that way. Yeah.
All right, Chris, what do you think about Rocket?
Well, that was the first thing. Question. I was like, man, I got to figure out which one of these guys is the I keep hearing in those background vocals, because the harmonies with him and Joe are just so, so good. Yeah. I didn't know if maybe it was Joe throwing a backing track in there.
Well, some of that is Joe. What?
Yeah, I mean,
it's his voice too. So don't
yeah, but man, and you know they sound like a live.
Oh, live.
I know,
good God, yeah.
Yeah,
they're actually heavier live on these songs. To tell you the truth.
Yeah, the rhythm section absolutely on point, man. You hear that bass line, ding, 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 and you know, and then I think you know both those guys are doing a fantastic job there. Another song with very singable chorus, great background vocals. You're going to kill me a little bit, guys.
No, not at all. You go ahead and slaughter it.
Near the end of that song, the kind of stuff goes on a little too long for me. That's it. That's the only flaw I have on this song. It's 6:37. It could have been probably 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Cut half a minute and a half of that out. On top of that, I think it's an excellent song. Great 1-2 punch to start the album. I gave it an 8.
Fair enough. Fair
but
enough.
Only because of that stuff near the end. Yeah.
And nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with that. All right, Anthony, talk to us. Rocket.
Songfacts.com.
It's a little unnecessary.
When played backward, the voice at the beginning says, "We're fighting with the gods of war." This is a reference to a gods of war. So pretty cool. And the lyric is loaded with references to various songs that influenced the band. Among them, Jack Flash, Jumping Jack Flash by the Stones, Rocket Man, Elton John, Sgt. Pepper, the Beatles, Ziggy by David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust, Jet by Paul McCartney, Johnny B. Goode, Genie, I'm not sure if that's Genie by David Bowie, don't know that song, Killer Queen by Queen, and Major Tom by David Bowie. So it sounds like Bowie really influenced him a lot.
I can see that.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I wrote in my notes. It's a 10, it's perfection. And what makes this song perfect is this is Def Leppard throwing back to the bands that made them who they are. They captured that sound perfectly and sound amazing doing it. So to honor your bands and to sound this good doing it, honor your heroes, is I think it deserves a 10 in my mind. Even though it's probably not my favorite of the big songs on the album, but I think these guys nailed this one too. So, what? I'm sorry.
Not your favorite. You're still giving it a 10.
I say out of all the big songs, Animal, all those other ones, yeah, but it's still a 10, man. This is perfection. These guys are throwing back to the guys they loved before, capturing the sound of the guys they loved before perfectly in this song. And they're recreating that sound perfectly. I mean,
I don't think it's a sound of the guys they love. This sounds nothing like Ziggy.
No, but I'm saying they're throwing back some of the lyrics and the little blips and blops they do in there. Or got those little things from the 70s that they liked. They've incorporated.
Is that what all that stuff near the end is? All that?
Probably.
Yeah.
Hmm. I never
knew that. That's okay. Probably what that is. All right, man. Yeah, dude, I can't argue it. I love it. I absolutely love the song. So let's go to
track. It didn't belong on Headbangers Ball, though, but that's another story.
Well, hardly any of this stuff would fit in Headbangers Ball today. All right, let's go to Animal, track 3.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So Animal, absolutely. Arguably, I guess it could be the second single instead of the first, but it says it's the first single. I honestly think this was the first song I remember hearing from these guys on this record. So that goes a long way. This was prime MTV area for the or era for the, you guys listening that are younger, way younger than us. This was polluted not only on Headbanger Ball, but throughout the day. I mean, this album was being pushed because, honestly, it's so incredible with these singles they released. This is one of those things. I'm trying to be critical on an album that is very, very difficult to be critical on because Why? You can instantly fanboy. Well, it's just because you're thinking to yourself, there ain't no way there's a bunch of damn tens on this album. I mean, I'm critical on Metallica, arguably, because Master Puppets is probably one of the greatest albums ever released, but I didn't give them all tens. I want to, but I can't. This Animal is so singable. It's one of those things. I'm torn between a 9 and a 10 on this one. I'm dropping a 9.5 on this one. It fits everything. I honestly could give it a 10 any day of the week. And depending on my mood, it would be a 9. I mean, it's just so, so good.
What you got written down, man?
I got nothing written down at all.
I mean, what score you got written nothing. Down?
I got 9.5 written down. That's what I said.
You just split it.
I split it. No, my scores are already in. They're here. Gotcha. I split this riffing. One.
I thought he's wavering. I couldn't tell.
No. Okay. I'm at a 9.5. I think it's just somewhere between outstanding and perfection for these guys, and I cannot argue. I mean, I know what y'all are going to do, I'm pretty sure. And I feel guilty right now not doing it. So
You should feel better.
Yeah, I should. This should be a 30 probably. You know what? Yeah, this is probably a 10.
Fudge.
Now, you know what? 9.5. I'm sticking to my core. All right, 30. Go, Chris.
my notes. Chorus, chorus, chorus. Harmonies, harmony, harmonies, harmonies. It falls in the pocket immediately. Joe's one of his best vocal performances on the album. Might be my favorite song on the album. It's right there, man. I love everything about it. First 10 of the night for me. It's a tremendous song. There's only so much you can say, right? I mean, I love a good chorus, and man, you get that in spades here with the harmonies and the vocals. It just, you could sing this all day, man. I mean, it's the kind of thing you just crank when you're driving down a road with the windows down. Fantastic song.
I agree. All right, Anthony.
Songfacts.com. He goes, this was Def Leppard's first hit in their native England. Even Pyromania, which was a massive album in America, was largely ignored in their home country. Animal was the song that finally broke through in the UK, and it earned them their first appearance on the popular music TV show Top of the Pops, where they were probably forced to lip sync, because I think they do that on Top of the Pops. Anyways, it's a 10, man. It's perfection. I'm not going to argue about it. Love it. Always have. And of the big releases from this album, this could be the personal favorite. I just always loved Animal. I love the sound of it, the feel of it. It just pulls you in and just holds you in. And it's just an amazing tune. So it's a 10, man. And I have no qualms about dropping another 10. And the 10s are going to keep coming. Trust me.
You know, there was near the end there's a part where he just like really starts, you know, letting it rip on the chorus there. And I wanted to pull that part, but it just didn't fit right the way. I don't know how to explain it, but like I pulled what I pulled, and that's a good part of it too. But like near the end there, man, they sound so good.
I wonder how he adjusts his vocals today to fit that spot in concert.
He probably uses that, what do they call it, the machine that helps him.
Auto-tune?
No, is it auto-tune?
You're thinking of auto-tune, but I don't think he does. I think he still does, like, there is some, I'm sure there's like some backing stuff, track. I think he still sings a lot of his stuff. Yeah, maybe a low register. I think they did start tuning down the instruments to accommodate the change of vocals, many bands do when they get older. So, makes sense. Yeah, dude, you know, guys, this is one of those freaking albums. Good God. All right, let's go to track number 4, Love Bites.
Thank you.
All right, guys, this is going to be fun for you boys. I freaking hate this song. I absolutely hate this song, and I don't know what it is.
Well, have a good summer, y'all.
I hate this song because it's just pure garbage.
Pure garbage.
Actually, I know.
You're just messing with us, dude.
I do dig. It's a good song, guys. It is a good song. It's just one of those cheesy little, you know, love songs. I never really liked it. You know what I mean? It wasn't one of the ones that I just scream out loud and I'm pretty sure there's so many nuances. I get it. It's probably one of the best love songs ever written, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Just never really grabbed me. It is an excellent song, though. I will give them a nod for having the Jesus Christ or Jesus of Nazareth go to hell at the end. I always wondered what that was about.
Is that legit?
That's crazy. Yeah, it's all about
it. If you listen to it, man, you can hear
not,
it.
It's not. It's something that Mutt Lang was just jibber jabbering in the studio, they said. It's all it was.
It sounds just like him saying that, to be honest with you. I mean,
I was going
to
pull it, but I didn't really want to like, put that on the podcast.
They say AC/DC, after Christ, devil come. That's not what it means either. Well, us doesn't mean we are sexual perverts either. Well, that might actually mean that.
Wait,
so. Well,
Anthony, they don't say that in their songs, but this says it in the song at the very
end.
It's
not. It's a misnomer. It's an urban legend, man. I've read.
What does it say? You never heard it?
I've heard it. Yeah, but it's okay. I was reading up on it this week. They say it's an urban legend. It's not.
Well,
true.
Yeah, they're going to deny that till the end. I would imagine.
It's hard to deny it when you hear it.
You hear it. It's blatantly there. I might just pull it
and drop it in there if you want me to.
In the post?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Is it worth doing that?
But anyway, I think the song's excellent. That's where I stand. Chris, Love Bites.
Yeah, I think they were trying to be a little edgy maybe at the time, and maybe they realized after the fact, ooh, we probably shouldn't have done that, and maybe they're trying to deny it now or something. I don't know. I didn't let that factor into my
That's why I got as high as it did for me, because it was the edginess.
Yeah. Yeah, again, on this one, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but tremendously singable. The chorus is fantastic. The harmonies are great. It was a sizable hit for these guys. It was a really good power ballad. Enjoyable listen. I wonder if it's, you know, it'd be a good one to put like in a vampire movie or something, you know, Love Bites, that kind of thing. Nice, I didn't know if that was ever intended
sexy,
or not. I don't
that'd
know.
That'd be a sexy vampire. It can be like one of those Nosferatu vampires.
But I gave it a 9. I don't think it's quite a perfection, but I gave it a 9. I think it's pretty close. It's a very good power ballad.
Yeah. It's an excellent song. It is. All right, Anthony, talk to us, Tin Master.
Songfacts.com. This was the fifth single released from Hysteria. Let's see. The album came out in August 87. The first single, Women, installed at 80. Animal made 19 in December. I'm trying to see if there's anything about Love Bites in here. I said, you might think listeners will be fatigued at this point, but clearly there was still an appetite as Love Bites reached number one in October 1988, giving the group their only chart topper. You believe that? According to songfacts.com, this was their only number one song of all those amazing songs they've had.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says.
You mean Pour Some Sugar wasn't?
No, like number two. Look it up. Sugar. I think Pour Some Sugar got beat by Michael Jackson or something crazy like that.
Yeah, I can imagine. He got a lot of ones back in the day, didn't he?
And this is the only track from the album that features keyboards, according to songfacts.com. So, which is kind of strange. You would think there'd be more keyboards here.
I think that there would be way more on this album because it's so much atmosphere as you hear these tunes play. You know what I mean?
Song Facts and Wikipedia the same kind of cousin? I don't know.
I get it.
Well, they've already had a discrepancy on the exactly. first hit single, so I don't know.
Yeah, true. Very true. Very
My
true.
Knowledge of Death Leopard, though, is I do remember Pour Some Sugar on Me. I don't think it did make it to number one, so I think they are right about that one. I think it was one of Michael Jackson's songs. I can't remember which one it was, though. And, I mean, do I need to give my rating? I mean, it's a freaking power ballad. It's Death Leopard. I mean, one of my favorite all-time bands. I mean, what do you think I would give this? A 2? Right, you know, it's a freaking 10. This is perfection, man. This is. If you took power ballad and put it in a dictionary, you could put Love Bites in the dictionary and say, this is the way you make a power ballad. That, in my mind, and they nailed it. From start to finish, it's a 10. It's perfection. Oh, so. No issues.
Hey, nothing wrong with that, man. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
And there's all one more coming after this, so I'm going with 5 in a row on these bad boys.
Jesus Christ. Here we go. It's crazy. All right, let's go to track. Where are we at? I don't even know where we're at. We're after Love Bites. Let's go to track number 5, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Hit it. my. Third single, according to Wikipedia, from the record. I don't remember the order, to be honest with you. I remember the videos, and I remember pretty much being overwhelmed, but how great this song was when it was released back in 87. The song has really, it's been overplayed. Let's face it, boys. This song has been overplayed for, 40 years now? 30 years? This is crazy. I get it. But you cannot deny the hook, how catchy this thing is, and what it means, honestly, to Hair. It really is. It encompasses everything that all the Hair guys wanted to be, and Def Leppard found a way to put it in a package, throw it out there, find incredible success, and arguably one of their best release singles. And you don't have to love it. You don't have to like it, because a lot of people think it's overplayed. Number one sitting right beside me here, or at least in the picture. This is what it is, and I will defend this one forever. It's a 10. Love it or hate it, this song is iconic and Def Leppard perfection at the same time. Period. 10. Chris, go ahead and kill it.
I'm not going to kill it.
Chris is flush of the
You'll be happy to know I have no flushes this week or this weekend.
You should.
There was nothing that landed below a 7, so there was no flushes for me. To me, this is probably the hardest song to review on this album. I will say, do I like this song? Not really. Is it their version of Cherry Pie? Absolutely.
I knew it was coming.
I will say that it's probably one of their biggest hits and probably put them on the map to some degree. So I guess you have to factor that into the decision. It is a catchy song. I got to say the hook is there for sure, man. Kind of stupid subject matter, so I don't know how you really view. I gave it an 8. I don't know. I wanted to give it a 7, but I was like, nah, it excellent deserves a little more than a 7. But I can't go higher than 8 on it. I feel like they're dumbing it down, and with this song, it's just like they're a better band than that. They don't need to do that, man. That's just my take. But I realize it's a massive, massive hit for them too. So,
oh yeah, right. It is. Yeah. It's okay. All right, Anthony, bring it back up.
With song facts, before we get into song facts, without this song, we wouldn't have Def Leppard. Let's just put it that way. This song saved. No, I'm serious. This song saved the album for them. They were floundering before this song came out. This song blew up, and the rest of the album blew up with it. And look that up. That's an honest to God fact, because it took up with strippers.
Something else
could have blown up. No. It may be later on, but they were floundering. When this song came out, this song really helped to launch this album to where it is today. And without this song, you may not have that same band that we have right now. So I'm just saying that.
Did you say something about strippers? Were you getting ready to say that?
Strippers picked this song up, and that's what really, I think, started launching it, was when the strippers got a hold of it.
So
look at, man, those are my facts that
this song became so big.
Facts that I know from this song, okay?
That's probably what launched Warrant's career as well, just so you know.
That's what I heard.
The Hair genre, yeah.
And then it got on radio, and then everything else fell into place after that, so... songfacts.com, as detailed in the VH1 Classics Albums episode in Hysteria, producer Mutt Lange kept pushing the band for more songs for the album. They were working on Armageddon It when they took a break, and Joe Elliott started playing his basic idea of Pour Some Sugar on Me on an acoustic guitar in the control room. It says Lange heard it and thought it was a great hook, so he had them record the song, which was done quickly. To compose the lyrics, Elliott and Lange each took recorders and dictated lyric ideas. They listened to each other's recordings, and Elliott picked something Lange said for the opening line, "Love is like a bomb." This was the basis for the rest of the lyrics. And it says, "Notice the rap influences on the verses Elliott sings." He explained to Kaizo 2000 magazine, said, "When we did Pour Some Sugar on Me, it was only written because Run DMC and Aerosmith had done Walk This Way. All of a sudden, rock and rap did mix, so we wrote our own." So that was kind of cool. And yeah, it's a 10 for me. Yeah, it's perfection. I know it's 5 in a row, but man, this is another perfect song by them. But I will say, of all the singles, this is probably my least favorite too. It's one of those songs that is extremely overplayed, even though I still jam to it and still love it. But I will not try and fight anybody who says it is overplayed. It's extremely overplayed, but I still love it. The song, it transcends genres. It was a massive hit. It's probably top 5, top 10 of all the songs to come out of the 80s. It was phenomenal how big the song became. So it deserves nothing less than a 10. Personal opinions aside, it's perfection.
So.
Right on, man. Right on. You can't argue the greatness of this song for sure. Chris can, but nobody else can. All right, let's go to track number six.
I didn't say it wasn't huge. I'm just saying.
He's trying to be a hater.
They're better than that. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, Lord. So Armageddon, its final song on the first side of this record, and I mean it's ditto for what we said in about half his freaking side. Incredible harmonies, super great hooks. I mean, they had some magic going when writing this record. And I didn't realize what Anthony was talking about during Pour Some Sugar, that they were about to throw in the towel after not finding anything magical. I can't hardly believe that, because these songs are so magical and so much just greatness coming out of these. Once again, another outstanding tune. I love it. That driving bass, the drums, and the guitar licks. Don't get me wrong, Steve is just wearing it out. Phil is putting in his touches. It's really, really fantastic how these guys work together. And was this the first album they actually wrote fully together, Anthony?
With Steve and Phil? I don't know, but I'm sure.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Did Phil join the team in Pyromania? Did he write the whole album? This might be the second album they
probably was.
Spent
I think
together.
He joined at the very end of High and Dry, but
That makes sense. And you can tell that they're starting. They gel together so well, and it's a shame what happens later in life. But yeah, wow, man, this song is outstanding, start to finish. I love it. I think it's a 9. Chris, what do you think about Armageddon?
I don't know if it's possible to have a sleeper on this album, but to me, this kind of. I mean, I know it was a single,
what?
So probably not. I don't know. Like, I mean, well, here's the thing. Like, if you look at the releases, you had the two before this were Pour Some Sugar and Hysteria. I mean, and this one came after that. I mean, it's kind of hard to come after those two songs. But, yeah, I mean, I've always really thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I'll be 100% honest. I couldn't remember if this was a single or not until I see it. I know they had so many singles on this album, but it kind of gets lost when it comes to, like, the other ones, I guess. But I think it's a tremendous song. It's a very catchy chorus yet again. Great harmonies yet again. Like I said, you know, Joe and Savage, man, those guys like play off each other vocally so well. I think the drums kind of stand out on this one. Solid guitar solo. I gave it 8.5.
Fair enough. Anthony, what do you think about Armageddon?
Songfacts.com says this song is a play on words. It says, "How are you getting it?" I think they mean, "Are you getting it? Armageddon it." I'm not sure who messed that up. It says, like the other songs on the Hysteria album, is written by the band with enough contributions from Mutt Lange that he also got a songwriting credit. Lange took over for Jim Steinman, whose sessions were scrapped in 1985. And as a personal sidebar, I would love to hear those sessions if they're out there somewhere. Jim Steinman version of these songs. With Lange, they created songs with a rock bombast and commercial appeal, and this one also played great in stadiums. Death Leopard became the first major rock band to play on a stage in the middle of the stadiums when they did so on the American leg of their Hysteria tour, which allowed them to sell more tickets and set them apart from other bands with long hair. And it says in quotes, "That's you, Bon Jovi, that were after their thunder." That's what it says in songfacts.com. It's like parentheses. "That's you, comma, Bon Jovi, !"
I like it. A little dig.
So I don't know. I don't know what.
Nothing like taking a shot at John Bon Jovi.
I don't
Jovi
know
for
what
reason,
Song
right?
Facts has against Bon Jovi, but Anyways, I give this one a 9.5. It's somewhere between outstanding and perfection. I don't hear perfection in this one completely. I hear something that is
dropping
close to it.
Away from his tens here.
But of all the big songs, oh, it's coming back. But of all the big songs on this album, I've always felt like this one didn't get all the way there. Still love the tune, always have, but it's not as big for me as the big ones that came off this album. So 9.5.
Fair enough. All right, flip this thing over. I'm going to go to track 7, Gods of War. Hit it. So as we start the second half of this album, Gods of War, man, this song to me is, I think it's the definition of sleeper. I mean, it really, yeah. It didn't get a single release. I don't know if it's played live a lot, if ever. But nonetheless, this song has always been one of the ones in my ears is just underrated. That little guitar lick down in between the chorus and verse is just outstanding. The backing vocals, fantastic, which is pretty much the story of this record. And Joe sounds absolutely fantastic. I think it's an excellent song. I'm at an 8. Chris, what'd you think about Gods of War?
Yeah, I think the mark of a really good album is the fact that we're this deep in and we're still getting songs this good. I mean, This is normally where an album starts to wane a little bit. There's no wane at all with this. This has always been one of my favorite songs by these guys, and you're right, it's, I should have said this is the sleeper, because this wasn't a single, and I'm kind of surprised, because I kind of thought it was.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, I guess I thought basically every song on this album was a single.
there's only a couple songs that maybe wouldn't be a great single. I mean, right. Love and Affection could be a good single too, so there's a few.
I mean, that chorus, you're right, man, those riffs are great, that chorus, the harmonies yet again, I mean, I know I say it all the time. Pretty decent subject matter, you know, it's right during the Cold War, so they had that going on too. Strong rhythm section on this song. I gave it a 9. I think it's...
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. All right, Anthony, what do you think about Gods of War?
Songfacts.com, it says, this song is a great example of the contributions of Def Leppard's guitarist Steve Clark, who died of a drug overdose in 1991. He would come up with different riffs and guitar ideas that producer Mutt Lang would use to build the songs. Gods of War started with a riff he came up with. So yeah, I thought, didn't know it was drugs. I thought it was alcohol for sure.
I love the alcohol too. Yeah. I think they missed.
I would say that there was probably some drugs involved. But yeah, they always said it was alcohol.
Yeah, like he asphyxiated or something like that when he died. Something like that where he, you know, something to that effect. So I don't know. I didn't dive into the dirty details. But
well, sure.
I'm giving this another 10, guys. I love this song. This is another one of those. If I had to pick maybe a top 10 Def Leppard songs, this would be easily in there. Maybe even my top 5. I mean, I've always personally loved this song. It's just an amazing tune, not a flaw to it. Band sounds freaking amazing. And of all the 10s, this is probably the biased 10 of the most on this album for me. Because I think this song should have been bigger than it was too. But screw it. I'm going to give it another 10. I don't care if fanboy this album. I love this album. It's been with me for 40 plus years and never tired of it. So,
if you guys are interested, I looked it up here. He said the postmortem revealed the cause of death was a respiratory failure caused by a lethal mixture of alcohol and prescription drugs. Apparently, he'd fallen down some stairs and broken his ribs, and he was taking pain pills on top of that. So, that probably had something to do with it. Yeah.
Unreal. But unreal.
That's what really changed the course of this band, I think. You know, the 90s hit and it hurt them, but Steve Clark dying really did, I think, was the final nail to kind of help them not become, stay the course. You know, they moved around a lot after this with Sound. Yeah. So I think those two things really contributed a lot to it. So
yeah, you may be on something there for sure. That may be very, very valid, because you're right. He wrote the majority of these riffs.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. All right, let's go to track number 8. It's called Don't Shoot Shotgun. So Don't Shoot Shotgun. Here we go. All right. This song has elements of greatness, and it also has elements of not so greatness. I don't know how to explain it. It kind of, there's parts that absolutely just make you riff vocally. The backing vocals on this are outstanding throughout the course. But there's just something in the transition, and I mean, you can hear it. It was in the cut you had, or the take you took out, Chris, right there. It went from a transition from one part to the other, and I just didn't think it mixed perfectly. But that being said, this song is still a great tune. I mean, it stands out as an outstanding track. It's probably my lowest score of the night. I gave this one a 7. I think it's great. So don't get me wrong, I'm not skipping this song. It just doesn't stand up to the rest of the tracks that we've heard on this record so far, thus justifying the lower score. Chris, what do you think about Don't Shoot Shotgun?
Yeah, I think it's a catchy, fun song. It's a bit of a rocker. I mean, I think you good point, man. You made a comment about how some of the songs on the second half here are a little more rocking. I get that on this. It's got good guitar riffs. Again, that chorus, man, the exceptional background vocals, and Joe, you know, Joe's voice is stellar on this album, let's just be honest. I'd say, you know, it's kind of middle of the road for me on this album, which is an exceptional album. So, like, I mean, middle of the road on this is not, but yeah, I gave it 7.5. I think it's between great and excellent.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Anthony, what'd you think about Don't Shoot Shotgun?
Solid tune from start to finish. Definitely can kind of hear. It's not as up there as the other ones that came before it, but a few are. But it's still upbeat, catchy, solid chorus. I still gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune. Digging it. So, first non-10. Well, then my second non-10.
Second non-10.
All right. Makes sense. It makes sense. All right. Let's go to track number, what are we up to? 9. Run Riot. So Run Riot, of all the songs on this record that sound more like traditional Def Leppard, On Through the Night and his in Pyromania, this song would have fit on either one of those records perfectly. You take away this production, you muddy it up a little bit to the same production we had on those albums, you would have never known this was written years later. This might have been written during that stage, but this could arguably be another sleeper. This song is just catchy, great vocals, great riff, and it really does have that traditional Leopard sound, which I mean, I'm a huge fan of anyway. Anything from this album back, I absolutely could adore. Nonetheless, I'm at an 8. I think this is an excellent song, and it certainly is bringing, I mean, it's taking a step back up in the direction we were just in. So we're moving back up, and I think excellence in songs. So yeah, man, 8. Chris, what'd you think about Run Riot?
Yeah, it's definitely a fast-paced rocker. Good point, man. I could totally hear this on one of their earlier albums too. I think the chorus has a really nice hook to it. I got a pretty similar feeling to the last song, to be honest with you. I think they're both exceptional songs on the back half of an album. Probably not quite as good as the ones around it, but really good. If there is a dip at all, it's those two songs, but that's not much of a dip, honestly. I mean, they're both very good songs. I gave this one a 7.5 as well, because I feel pretty similar. I feel like this and Don't Shoot Shotgun are pretty similar songs. But gotcha. They're both rocking. Rock a little more than the rest of the album. But, you know, at the same time, they're really good songs. And this may be slightly better. I don't know. I could maybe go to an 8 on this one, but yeah. I'll give it an 8. Seems fair.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Anthony, what'd you think about Run Riot?
It's heavy. It's loud, heavy, bombastic. It's another tune here that has that kind of throwback Leopard sound that I love. Works to start to finish. Band and Joe sound amazing. And Joe's vocals, man, these are some of the strongest ones on the album for him. Man, he is tearing it up on vocals on this one. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune. And it kind of makes you wonder, Rick Allen, if he can kill it on drums like this, on a song like this, why didn't they stay a little heavier? Because he obviously can still do it, you know? So probably wear him out in concert, though, I would think, with one arm trying to play this kind of music.
I'm not sure how much he could do like this.
I was getting ready to say, I think he was giving it 100%. They were trying to work with something to save his career at this record, and they did it.
Or maybe they were just like,
kudos to those guys for doing that. You know, a lot of bands would just replaced him. Honestly.
Well, you know that story, don't you? When they walk into the hospital, about ready to, I think, let him go, and he's in there, like he's got like two things at his feet, playing with his feet, and he's got one with his arm, and he's like, I think I can figure out how to do my left arm on my left foot. And the band was like, wait a minute here, he might be onto something, and they decided to stick with him and see if he could figure it out, and then they stay with him after that. So that's the story I heard about it. So
pretty cool. Man, it's an amazing story. If I'm mistaken, Anthony, I think, if I remember, this was on maybe like MTV or something. There was a documentary about this. I think he considered suicide at some point.
I think I heard that too.
Very, very shortly after the wreck. So this was in California, right? He wrecked in California, correct? Not in Europe.
I thought it might have been overseas.
No, I think he was in California.
It's in California. I know it was a bad curve that he went around.
It was
too fast. He was drunk.
It was in a Ferrari, right?
It was like a Ferrari.
Corvette.
He was drunk, got thrown out of the car.
A Corvette on Wikipedia.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was some kind of sports car. I couldn't remember exactly what it was.
C4 or whatever that means.
Yeah, they said it threw him into a field or something, and he managed to find his arm. They tried to attach it, but like sepsis. Yeah. Or something set in, and they had to take it back off because it wasn't healing.
It would have killed him. It would have killed him.
Something like
sepsis
that.
Sepsis kills you. Yeah, it would have killed you if you can't
something
treat it.
Something like that. And, but wow, he figured out a way, and kudos to this band. They could have dropped him at any time.
It would have been real easy. I mean, it wouldn't have been easy, but a lot of people think, hey, we got to think of our careers here.
Axl Rose would have put up with that?
No, he did. He wouldn't.
He got rid of.
He'd have sent his agent to go fire the guy. He wouldn't even done it himself. That's the way he would.
They got rid of their drummer because of alcohol. So
even Dave Mustaine. Dave Mustaine would have put up with that. Yeah. Dave is notorious for firing people.
I love
Ozzy. He sent Sharon in there to do that.
Probably, yeah. All right, let's go to track number 10. It's called Hysteria. Hit it, Chris.
Stop this fire.
So Hysteria. All right. This is one of those ones where, you know, initially I was thinking, this is a bunch of recycled riffs. I mean, it is. They use the same style riffs in Love Bites, in this song, and in Love and Affection. And it works. I'm sorry, it works. And I get it. This song is one of the ones that really, you know, me and Chris talked about some of our scores, and I kind of hid this from him because I didn't want to give it away. This is one of the ones that, of all the ballads, I think this is superior. And it may be like a little bit faster paced than your normal ballad, but I think this is the superior ballad on this record. I think this is arguably maybe their best ballad they've ever written in my ears.
It's up there.
This song is absolutely fantastic. I challenge anybody out here to get this, put on a set of headphones, close your eyes, and listen to this song, because you can not only hear each instrument, the vocal lines clearly, but you can just feel that music. You can feel the passion in the voice as Joe is singing this and in the backing vocals. This song has a magic to it, and I get why they probably named the album Hysteria. It's fantastic. It's outstanding. It's perfection. I'm dropping my third 10. This is my secret track that I didn't want to tell anybody about. I'd love it. It's maybe silly, but yeah, I love the song.
I may drop another 10 here in a minute too.
So dude, this is what defines something that hits me in all the right spots. You know, in the feels, Anthony, in your words, in the feels. This one does it for me. I love it. Chris, Hysteria.
Yeah, when you alluded to the fact that you were not giving this a 10, I was a little like, are you sure about that, man?
Yeah, dude, I didn't want to give it all away, but yeah, it's so good.
I mean,
so
obviously, it's a title track, and you know that they had to have a really good feeling about this song if it's a title track. Yeah, I think some songs, they feel like your youth when you hear them, you know, and to me, this song falls right into that category. It's just nostalgia about it that just can't be denied, I don't think. This reminds me of Saturday nights cruising around, you know, the strip there back in the day. The chorus is just so smooth. It's another song that just starts right in the pocket again, like you said. And I think it's kind of an example of less is more sometimes too. You know, they're not over the top with this, but it's perfect. The vocals are perfect. The chorus is perfect. It's just and I can't believe it's the 10th song on this album. Look how deep this thing is on this album.
I know, right?
This is gonna be a 30, man. It's an easy 10 for me. I think it may be the best song on the album.
I couldn't argue that either. All right, Anthony. Hysteria.
Songfacts.com. The song really is about finding spiritual enlightenment, said Def Leppard guitarist Phil Collin in his Songfacts interview. Not many people know that because it sounds like just getting hysterical. But it's actually about that. It's about finding this deeper thing, whether you believe it or not. So it's kind of cool to hear that little song fact. I mean, I didn't even go in my description. It's a 10, man. I love ballads, and I hate to be always that person that pulls out like top 10 songs from their best album, you know, one of their best albums. But there's three songs on here that could easily be in my top 10. Gods of War, Hysteria, Animal. I mean, those three songs, man, I could listen to those songs on a loop and never get tired of them. Just love those songs so much. And Hysteria, every time I hear it, like Chris said, every time I hear it, I am just washed in this wave of nostalgia. And I just feel young and youthful again. And there's just something so amazing and powerful about this song that I've always just loved. It's got a groove to it. You kind of melt into, so to speak, when you hear it, you know?
Very much. I agree 100%.
I agree, man, 100%.
And Joe's got some of the best hair in that video that he's ever had. His hair.
Super mullet.
His hair. I wanted his hair so bad in the 80s. I wanted that hairstyle so bad. My dad wouldn't let me have it. I wanted it so bad. Every time I saw his hair, I was like, I want Joe Elliott's hair. That's what I want. I want that look. My dad would never let me have it, though, man.
Oh, man. That's great stuff. Great stuff. Yeah, all right, guys, let's move it up. Track 11, Excitable.
Yeah.
All right, so Excitable, track 11. This song right here to me is the most maybe futuristic sound of the Def Leppard, of what's going to come, maybe. But lyrically simplistic, this is not a great sort, or it's not a great example of Def Leppard writing a song, in my opinion. It has a little bit of a catch to it. I get it. But this is, I mean, I don't even know if I want to say it this way, but this is filler. I'm sorry. This song is filler compared to everything else that we listen to. I still think it's a great tune, but it's just not as good as the rest of the stuff that we've heard. I do see, I don't know, man. It's filler. That's all. It's a 7, dude. I gave it a 7. I think it's great, but it just does not fit with the rest of the record. That's all I'm saying. All right, Chris, I'm sure you're going to drop something stupid on this.
I disagree with you. I don't think it's filler. I think it's a little better than maybe Don't Shoot Shotgun, personally. Listen, this is something that the beginning, the way it goes, almost feels like it could be like a cheesy kind of horror movie or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
I do.
I mean that in the best way, by the way. That's not an insult. I could just, like, I know there's elements to this song that feel like it would belong in a movie or something. I just think it's a fun song that gets you pumped up. It's got a real catchy chorus, great harmonies, and we're all sitting there beating. The drums stand out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a pretty solid song on the back half of this album. I gave it an 8. And I think, yeah, that's, man, good. It's borderline sleeper material for me. I've always liked this song.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. All right, Anthony, what do you think about Excitable?
I mean, it's just kind of another throwback to that heavy sound, too, at times. I mean, when they get past some of the techno stuff they throw in there, when you're really getting into the beat and the groove, that's a pretty
heavy
sound.
That might be what it is. It's that techno thing, and it's something I can't get. Yeah. You're right. That may have been that may be what's triggering me.
That's what I said. This is another throwback, heavy-sounding Leppard song. Mixed with this new pop sound they brought into this album. It's a solid tune, got a nice punch to it. Band and Joe sound fantastic. 8, excellent for me too on this one. So, but it's got a nice combination. This is sort of like Hysteria meets High and Dry or something. It's one of those songs that kind of, you know, it's kind of unique the way they threw this one together.
Right.
So.
I got you. All right,
that whole "Are You Excitable" thing going on too. Oh, I mean, look, it happens a couple times, and I didn't catch it, but it happens a couple times in the song. I don't know. It just gives me this horror movie vibe to it. I don't know.
Final track, track 12, "Love and Affection." Hit it, Chris. So for "Love and Infection," or as I like to call it, "Hysteria / Love Bites Part 2," the song, it's catchy. Yeah, it's good. It's just a little bit of a disappointing way to close out an album that was so rocking, in my opinion. And I think that's probably why my score is as low as it is. And it's not low by no means, but it just doesn't feel right in positioning on this record. I think there would have been a better way to close this album out, and I will discuss that in a minute. But nonetheless, song is still great. Joe's got his soft vocals going perfectly on this song. Don't get me wrong, I get it, but it just doesn't get me. I think the song is great. Arguably not a great way to end an incredibly stellar album. I gave it a 7. Chris, what'd you think about "Love and Affection"?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all, man. Okay, that is clearly Hysteria. Like, I mean, it's the same chords, everything. I also love Bites. I I'd have left this off personally. I would not put this on the album. I would have put God's War at the end of this thing, and it would have been a great way to close the album. But that's just me. I don't think it's a good closer. But at the same time, Joe sounds great. It's got a good chorus to it. So I get what you mean. It's a tough one. I was going to give it a 6. I'll just be honest with you. But at the end, I was like, no, I don't want to give anything a 6. This is too good an album for that. And this isn't a bad song, honestly. But it is a recycled riff. There is no question about it. And I don't really think they should have done that. And this album's over an hour long, so they probably could have just left this one off, to be honest with you. But I gave it a 7 as well. But so many good potential closers on this album. This is not it.
I agree. All right, Anthony. Love and Affection.
I mean, you could have closed with Excitable. That'd been a good one to close.
That would have been a good one too. Yeah.
You could have, yeah, for sure.
You could have flipped. Well, you can flip flop these.
I'll be 100% honest. I don't even remember this song. I don't remember it being on the album. I must have always stopped before this song came on. Either that or it was put on later. I don't know.
I still think it's an excellent tune, but I get what you guys are both saying about everything. I think it is a pretty solid way to close an album out. I mean, it kind of leaves me wanting more to hear the next album, so that's kind of the way I feel about it. I think Joe sounds great, band sounds great. You know, even if it is a little recycled from some of the other songs on here, it doesn't really bug me too much, but I still give it an 8. Excellent tune, so.
It's more than a little. It sounds just like Hysteria, dude.
Try not to let that bother me too much, okay? So walk away.
Fair enough.
All right, guys. Well, first of all, this is going to be my final thoughts on the record. And obviously, before we go any further, Anthony, this is absolutely a fantastic pick and absolutely a way. I mean, it was just a great listen. And we had an extra week on this one, which, hell, I didn't even need it. But, you know, I knew what I was going to do with this record. I'm going to say this before I get into the spiel. As good as this album is, and hear me out, guys, this is probably going to make y'all triggered. You get rid of Excitable, you get rid of Love and Infection, you make those bonus or B-sides, and you make this a 10-song record, you end this album with Hysteria, and I swear to God, this album is a solid 10, probably all the way through. There would be very little dips in your mind, because if you in my scoring, keep in mind, this is my scoring, those are my two of my three lowest rated songs, that being said, they're still good songs, they're still great songs, but I think there's so much more strength in the rest of this record. Now, on to what else I have to say.
What's your real opinion?
You're talking about just a trip down memory lane. I remember getting this on cassette. My younger brother got this on cassette. Our aunt took us to a mall in Lexington, Kentucky the Saturday after this album dropped. And of course, Neil picked this thing up, and I picked up, I can't remember what I picked up at the time, but I remember this album, between whatever we bought that day, this was the better album. And throughout time, I have not only owned this on cassette personally, I've owned it on CD and now own it on vinyl. And it's one of those albums that you can't just not listen to. This is something you can grab and listen to it straight through with no skips. I mean, don't get me wrong. I joked about skipping Love Bites, but you literally can listen to this record, no skips. It's a great listen. It's a great, just takes me back to being in high school, guys. This album was played from 9th grade until 12th grade, for the most part, by just about everybody who listened to the hair rock or the hair metal back in. This wouldn't, I mean, I barely would give this the metal rating this day and time. And nonetheless, man, what an album. What an album. This could arguably be one of the best albums we've ever reviewed. This could be one of the best albums ever released in the genre, if not the best. No arguments here. Highly recommended for a fan. God, if you listen to this, you probably ought to listen to this album a million times. It's absolutely an amazing listen. And it's amazing what they did with the band during this time, recovering from a traumatic drummer accident and then salvaging this, arguably one of the greatest records ever released in this, at least from this decade. My score is 8.6. I'm absolutely going to rate on this one up to a 9 because I think the album's outstanding. Because of the couple of tracks that gave it a 7, it's the reason why it's low as it is. So 8.6, not good enough in my ears. It's a 9. Chris, final thoughts?
Hey, you pretty much stole everything I was going to say. So
you're welcome.
Good job.
You're
welcome. Anthony, tremendous pick. I mean, I'm glad we could end the season on a high note, quite honestly.
Absolutely.
It's a lot better than struggling through Britney Fox for 3 weeks. Thank you for that.
Give that a little. Yeah.
I'm going to say, Jimmy was saying it too. I think it's the best hair metal album of all time. That's my first note. I really don't think it can be argued. I think you have 7 singles off this album, so many hits. The number of hits off this album is just insane, honestly. Joe is the ultimate vocalist in this genre, in my opinion. There's no one better than him. His vocals just soar off of these tracks. That's all there is to it. There's so much nostalgia. The only thing I'll say, they don't really have like a George Lynch type guitarist that just dominates, but they don't need it for what their sound is. No. They blend together more than that. They don't have some guy like ripping in during the chorus and just taking over. Yeah. But that's not what they are. There's so much nostalgia on this album. When you think about it, this thing came out in 1987, guys. We were freshmen in high school. This is like the soundtrack of our high school years, this album. We were listening to this the whole way through, man. I mean, it's maybe one of the most listened to albums we've got. Like you said, man, if we have any listeners who haven't, or I can't imagine any of our listeners haven't listened to this album, obviously we would recommend it. But it's like, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably listen to this album. Let's just be 100% honest here. My score was 8.4, which I'm also rounding to a 9 because it is an outstanding album. Pretty much everything you said, man, it was just mimicked. But yeah, that's where I am.
It's what it is.
And I really do think, and I've thought that forever, this may be the best hair metal album there is. And maybe the best album in the 80s. I know everybody else say Michael Jackson. I would much rather listen to this than Michael Jackson. That's just my personal preference. I realize the hits and Michael Jackson. I mean, I know what it is. But still, to me, this is the best album. Probably the 80s and definitely the best hair metal album there is.
Excellent.
I know that's a bold claim, but it's what it is, man.
It is what it is. I agree. All right, Anthony, your final thoughts of this record.
My final thoughts. I wrote, this album was built to last and built to stand high and proud throughout the decades, and it is still doing that almost 40 years after its release. I had this album as a teen. I loved it then, and I love it now. When I take the time to listen to this album front to back, I'm easily reminded of the masterpiece this band and Mutt Lange put together, and I'm instantly back in my happy place. Highly recommend this album to anyone who just loves great, catchy music that will put the hooks in you. Final rating, 9.3, almost perfection. This album deserves that honor. And if you guys are rounding up, maybe I'll go to 10 and make it a freaking perfection.
I could not argue. If you would round this to a 10, I would not.
You know what? Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. With a 10, this album honestly, is perfection.
Honestly, I mean, how can I make the claim this is the best hair metal album of all time and not give it a 10 myself, honestly? Right, I mean, really, I'm right there with you.
One of the reasons why we probably avoided this one a little while, because it's just like shooting 10s in a barrel.
We knew this was going to be a slobber fest, but whatever.
Some of these albums are so good and so iconic that you just... What do you say? I got to the point of a little fatigue because I didn't know what to say. I'm like, that's great. It's excellent. It's perfection. I mean, band sounds amazing. Everybody's firing on all cylinders. You know, the crazy thing is these songs are a lot heavier in concert, too. When you see these songs live, when they're stripped down and really they're heavy sound, when a few of these songs came on, I was like, whoa, Armageddon, it's got a lot of punch to it. It's not as soft as it is on the records, you know. And so, it's...
No, man, it's fantastic stuff for sure, man. And so just so we can clarify a couple of things here, guys, there's not gonna be a pick this week, no picks. We are going to do for the first time ever in our 4 or 5 years, whatever, how long we've been doing this, I don't even know how many years we've done this, we're taking a summer break. We're going to do like so many other podcasts. We're going to take a break this summer. The main reason is there's some scheduling things are going on. We would be lucky to drop one or two episodes probably the entire summer as far as our schedules goes. 3 of us have vacations lined up throughout the year. And my work schedule hasn't been very kind to this podcast at all based on what I've been doing and my doctor appointments for my chiropractor. So it hasn't been really conducive for our schedule. So we should be able to get back to this in the fall. I think that ideally my vision is that we will have like a podcast scheduled sometime after Labor Day, and
I think Labor Day would be a good time,
and then
to think
that
about
podcast will simply be just a discussion of what we've been listening to throughout the summer, maybe a couple of 3 songs, or maybe just discuss a couple albums that's really touched us throughout the year or throughout the summer, and then we'll make a pick then to move forward. But guys, this has been awesome. awesome ride so far. And the break will probably do us good, get us cleaned up to where we don't have to be, you know, kind of pushed to a schedule for a little while, and get your mind on the things you really do love. And this is, it's family for all of us. So we got a summer full of family. Anthony, I know that you probably got stuff already scheduled. I know you pretty much do all kinds of stuff as far as pre-setting. Man, go ahead and talk about your, I know your other podcast, the Songlines podcast, has probably got a couple lined up. I'm not sure how deep you are in the summer. And guys, for those who listen, Anthony's got a pretty good YouTube channel going right now that he's basically documenting the rise of the cicada here in the South. So it's pretty fun. And pretty eerie videos with these evil looking bastards. But nonetheless, Anthony, what you got going on this summer?
Summer, my song lines and tan lines will probably take a break too. I'm in that kind of weird little gray area where I'm kind of figuring what to do with it now that I'm really getting involved with YouTube. Disembodied Screams, if you want to check out some good horror stuff. My horror movie haiku episode. I'm 2 views away from 100, so please go check that one out today. This seems to be very popular. I took horror movies and summarized them in a haiku form. So that's kind of what I did. So it seems pretty unique. Verse of Nature, I'm capturing all the cicada stuff crazy. I'm driving my wife crazy with cicada videos. So check out that channel. And that's my nature channel. I'm catching all kinds of nature videos and nature haiku and all that stuff. And then Summertime Songs 3, if I get it together, that'll be my next one on Songlines and Tanlines before I have the summer break. And then I'm going to figure out what to do beyond that. And that's it. That's for me right now. So, you know, that's it. That's what I've been doing. Late Night with the Devil is an amazing horror movie if you guys have not seen it yet. And Infested is also a great one. It just came out on Shudder. Both of them are on Shudder. I would recommend both of those. Spiders and Infested, man. If you don't like spiders, run.
Good Lord.
So, anyways, that's where I am right now.
Fantastic. So. All right, guys. So for the Audible Ecstasy podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is it. Disclaimer, we do not own the rights to these songs. We are only celebrating the music that defined our lives through the young years until now. We do not get paid and are not endorsed by these artists. Thank you for listening.